This is the penultimate lecture for the term. So you're almost done having to listen to me. We made it up to 16. We're almost done with this chapter. Just a couple more slides to get through. We left off on 15 talking about the fact that there's an environmental component to phenotype. This is a change in gears. We're looking at some family trees in humans, and these family trees arranged this way are called pedigrees. So the point of the slide is that there is such a thing called pedigree analysis. Remember what we were talking about on the test cross that I gave you. There's different kinds of test crosses, but when I introduced that test cross to you, what were we trying to accomplish with the test cross? Looking at possible what?
Genotypes.
Right. Specifically, what we were trying to do with the test cross is figure out the genotype of an individual with the dominant phenotype, right? Since dominant phenotype is ambiguous with respect to genotype. There's more than one genotype that can lead to the same dominant phenotype. Well, with flies, I think that was the example, wasn't it? Or no, it was flower for pea plants. With pea plants or with flies or things like that, you can simply go through with the cross and actually do it. But for various reasons, we can't do that with humans. First of all, there's the ethics of it. We're not really allowed to cross humans for genetic experiments just to figure out what the genotype of a human is. Even if there were no ethical concerns, they'll think about how impractical it would be. I mean, it would take at least 15 years to get to an F2, right? If you breed them at 15, assuming that they're ready to breed at 15. So we don't use humans in genetic experiments. And therefore, we could use, or did use, pedigree analysis, which is basically looking at the family trees, looking at the traits of ancestors and their descendants, and knowing what you've learned about dominance and recessivity and inheritance, try to figure out what the genotypes are of various individuals. Well, this is kind of an old-fashioned thing now. Only recently has it become old-fashioned because it's only been recently that we can so easily just look at any individual's DNA. We couldn't do that until just recently. So we'd have to do that, this thing. I just wanted to, even though it's kind of an old-fashioned idea, I just wanted to introduce the rationale. So for instance, if a child of two parents has a recessive trait, well, what do you know about What does the fact that that child has a recessive trait tell you? First of all, just about the child itself.
Whether the genotype is both one allele and they're homozygous?
Right. If assuming this is a completely dominant situation, a Mendelian gene, then the fact that the child is recessive means that the genotype must be homozygous recessive. Well, if both of the parents, or if neither of the parents is recessive in the trait, what does that tell you by pedigree analysis? Yeah?
Assuming Mendelian genetics, it would be both of them are heterozygous.
Yes, why do they have to both be heterozygous?
Because then there would be a 25% chance of the child having both recessive.
There would be a 25% chance, but go a little deeper on saying why it has to be heterozygous. What if one parent is heterozygous and the other one's homozygous?
Well, then the dominant trait would be all across the board and be 100%. That would not necessarily mean a lot showing up.
That's right. And that's because in order for a child to have the recessive trait, it has to be homozygous recessive. And the only way it can be homozygous recessive is to have received a recessive allele from each of the two parents, which in turn means that each of the two parents has to have a recessive allele. But if we, as we assumed, both of them have the dominant trait, then that means they also have to have a dominant allele. That's why they have to both be heterozygous. And that's basically the deductive reasoning that occurs in pedigree analysis. But it's much easier nowadays just to look at the DNA and be very sure. All right, in 17, we're looking at a couple of DNA tests that can be performed. Speaking of looking directly at the DNA. And really, these are accomplishing exactly the same thing. These are prenatal DNA tests. So DNA testing the DNA of a fetus to check whether there might be an unsurvivable genetic disorder, for instance. And therefore determining whether the pregnancy should continue. The only difference in these two tests is when they are conducted, really, and how the DNA is extracted. The DNA testing is simply using the sample to look at the DNA. And you can make as much as you want. Once you have a little, you can use PCR to make as much as you want, as you've already learned. Actually, the left one here is a later test, later in pregnancy. This is amniocentesis, which is named for the fact that the DNA is sampled from the amniotic fluid, which is the liquid that the fetus is swimming in until it's born. Well, DNA from the fetus itself sloughs off just like our skin cells are sloughing off of us into the air. Well, they get sloughed off into the amniotic fluid, so you don't have to actually puncture the fetus, you just draw from the amniotic fluid, and that will have enough DNA to test. But earlier on, you could perform a chorionic villus sampling test, this CVS test, which really just also doesn't directly sample from the fetus, but samples from the placenta just by sucking a little bit of the placenta, called a chorionic villus, named for the chorion, which is one of the extraembryonic membranes in amniotes, which we're examples of. Anyway, the placenta is an interesting organ because it's half the property of the mother and half the property of the fetus. It's where the two interface, where they exchange materials, where the fetus is fed from the mother and where the mother takes waste away from the fetus. But anyway, that's where you can get the DNA for that. And that happens earlier, which is why you can see that fetus is early. It's much earlier fetus than this one, right after the embryonic stage. And I think we're done with the chapter because 18 and 19 combined is just one of these familiar summary tables. I've already covered all of this. So I'll stop that recording.